weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to the two Johnnies in Africa for the afternoon entertainment. It is Thursday, April 25th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, Niall Quinn reflects on the life of former Ireland player Charlie Hurley, who sadly passed away aged 87. Staying with soccer, David Connolly and Rebecca Cray chat Premier League as we ask, is that the end of the road for Liverpool's title ambitions? It's a big weekend in the Women's League of Ireland Premier Division as well, so Becca will be looking forward to that. Former Ireland international Sharon Lynch is with us as Scott Beaman reveals his hand ahead of Ireland against Scotland in the Women's Six Nations on Saturday. And the NFL draft begins, so we'll be speaking to Jeff Shepherd and Connor Brophy with their eye on America. It's also another busy day of sports news with Irish interest across a host of Olympic sports, so we'll be rounding up all of that over the course of the next hour. As always, if you want to have your say, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp 0871879200, or we're on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening. Great to have your company here on Game On. Welcome along to the show. News headlines, and there's a lot of news today. Starting with boxing, Mayo's Shannon Sweeney has qualified for the 50kg final at the European Championships in Belgrade, with Aoife O'Rourke making the middleweight decider. But there was disappointment for Kelly Harrington and Niamh Faye. Shannon Sweeney comprehensively dispatched Armenia's Anoush Grigorian 5-0. Olympic champion Kelly Harrington suffered a first defeat in 3 years and 32 bouts as she lost out to Serbia's Natalia Shadrina on a split decision win in their 60kg contest. Niamh Faye's run ended at the semi-final stage against Romanian's Lacra Mora Pedijoc, who won by unanimous decision in the 54kg class. And Roscommon boxer Aoife O'Rourke is guaranteed a silver medal at middleweight after her hard-fought split decision win over Busra Izildar of Turkey. The Irish women's cricketers got off to a good start, a perfect start in their women's T20 World Cup qualifying campaign. They managed a 6-wicket win over the UAE today. Set 106 for victory, Ireland comfortably reached their target with 23 balls to spare, with Emma Richardson impressing with both bat and ball. The all-rounder backed up excellent figures of 2 for 15 with an unbeaten 22 striking on both fronts at crucial junctures of the match. Ireland returned to action at the Zayed Cricket Stadium in Abu Dhabi on Monday when they face Zimbabwe. Good news for fans of gymnastics. Of course, Reece McLennan has advanced to the pommel horse final at the European Championships in Rimini, Italy, where he will defend his title tomorrow evening. Teammate Dominic Cunningham is through to the vault final on Saturday, but Reece McLennan's final will be live on RTE2, and the RTE player from 5:30. Paul O'Flynn will be presenting that one with a couple of expert guests, so do tune in at 5:30 tomorrow for that. Hopefully it will be a success for Reece McLennan and indeed for Dominic Cunningham on Saturday. Ireland's Jake McCarthy won his heat today to reach the lightweight single sculls A final at the European Rowing Championships in Hungary. McCarthy, the twin brother of Olympic hero Fintan McCarthy, finished 3.5 seconds clear of Hungarian great Peter Galambos, a 5-time world championship medalist and 2019 European champion. McCarthy will compete in his LM1X decider on Sunday morning. His Skibbereen clubmate Paolo Donovan today raced for the first time at this level, north of his usual lightweight limit. The 2-time Olympic medalist and all-time lightweight great finished third in his men's singles heavyweight heat and will compete again in Friday's rep. UCC's Margaret Cremin, meanwhile, placed second in her lightweight singles prelim race and competes in her final on Sunday. Alison Bergen of Fermoy and Zoe Hyde of Tralee were also second in their women's doubles heat, and Laika O'Donovan will race in the rep on Friday. In snooker, Ronnie O'Sullivan required just 40 minutes today to seal his place in the second round of the World Snooker Championship, but a 10-1 win over Jackson Page, resuming 8-1 in front after a dominant opening session yesterday. The world number one duly swept up the two frames required to book a last 16 clash with Ryan Day. And finally, in squash, Ireland's sole hopeful for the Irish Squash Open 2024 bowed out in the quarterfinal stage to number one seed and world number 18, Nada Abbas. So a busy, busy day on the news front across a host of sports, to be fair, as we turn our attention to football now.
Game On.
Football.
Now, as I mentioned at the start of the show, some very sad news. Now, Rebecca Cray is with me and David Connolly joins us on the line as well. Former Republic of Ireland centre-half Charlie Hurley has died at the age of 87. Hurley won 40 caps for Ireland between 1957 and 1969 and was considered one of the best defenders in England throughout his career, renowned for his aerial ability. Born in Cork in 1936, Hurley moved to Essex with his family as a youngster and began his football career with Millwall. He would later become synonymous with Sunderland, playing over 400 times for the Black Cats, and was named the club's Player of the Century on the occasion of their centenary in 1979. Hurley finished his career at Bolton, but it is at Sunderland where he's truly revered, earning the nickname The King from their supporters. At the end of their promotion campaign in 1963-64, Hurley finished second to legendary England captain Bobby Moore in the vote for the Football Writers Footballer of the Year award. So we lost a truly great man, a legend of Irish football. And Charlie Hurley, in his own words, we'll hear from now, and then we will hear from another Irish great, Niall Quinn. Before we speak to another Irish great, David Connolly, here is Charlie Hurley.
I'd never been to Sunderland. I didn't even know where it was. When I got up there, we had a bad team. The team wasn't very good. Alan Brown, God rest his soul, he signed me. He said, I'm going to, Charlie, he said, they paid 18,000 quid. That was a fortune in those days. He said, I'm going to build the team around you. He said, we need your type of character. He didn't know it, but he did know it, because the character he was looking for, I knew. I mean, I had it, so I was a winner. I mean, I was one of seven kids, so, you know, I wasn't spoiled at all. That's, you know, what it was all about. I mean, when I go up there now, I do love, and as you can see now, they still love me, you know. I shall never forget Sunderland.
Yes, Tony, very sad news about Charlie this morning. A great man. It was a pleasure to meet him, a pleasure to be in his company. And in an Irish context, he was a truly inspirational footballer, a rock at the heart of the defence, courageous, brave, tough, but fair. I'm told he'd go through you with a dose of salt, but he'd pick you up and ask you, are you okay afterwards? That passed on too then to Sunderland, because up there it became even bigger. He's a complete icon, and I say is because he will continue to be a complete icon. You must remember when he was doing this stuff for Sunderland back in the day, the people up there had shipbuilding and they had the coal mines. And when they'd come up at the weekend and go to a game, he was their inspiration. He was the one that drove the team forward, and they could see from his bravery, his courage, his leadership, that their club meant something to them. And he will always be known as the King in Sunderland. And I think another sort of point to say about his legacy, there are still kids getting tattoos up in Sunderland of Charlie Hurley, the King. Who else in the 60s who played football would be getting that today? An amazing man, very sad news. Had the great pleasure of being in Cork with him. Roy Keane brought the Sunderland team to Cork in 2007. Charlie came with us, brought him to his house where he was born, where he lived his early life. Quite emotional, but brilliant time. Great time for everybody. Great man. Just so sad to hear of his passing, but his legacy is secure, that's for sure.
So that was Niall Quinn paying tribute to the great Charlie Hurley. And we heard from Charlie himself at the start of that clip there. As I mentioned, David Connolly is on the line. David, as a former Sunderland player, I'm sure you might have even had some encounters with Charlie Hurley, but I'm sure many people have spoke very highly of him to you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, very sad news. You know, as Niall so eloquently put, you know, a real icon up in Sunderland. And, you know, fantastic story, you know, but obviously moving to England very young, survived the Blitz. He even overcame a cruciate knee ligament injury. Can you imagine in those days? So quite incredible. Second to Bobby Moore in the Footballer of the Year. Mm-hmm. So that just shows you what a fantastic player he was. So, yeah, really sad news today. And, you know, as we've seen from the tributes from Sunderland, Millwall, Bolton, you know, Reading, where he managed, he leaves a real hole.
And the legacy as well. I was amazed to hear Niall Quinn say there's kids still getting tattoos of Charlie Hurley.
Yeah, well, yeah. if there's one club where you want to be a hero at, I mean, geez, they don't come much bigger than Sunderland. I mean, you know, love their football up there, and you know, live for their football. So yeah, he was adored up there, and yeah, he still is. So you know, to be voted the player of the century was something. And you know, I've seen the videos where he was out on the pitch and taking the adulation of the fans. So I mean, yeah, they love him up there, rightly so.
Well, our thoughts and prayers are indeed with all of Charlie Hurley's former teammates, his friends and family. May he rest in peace. David, you are on your way to Brighton and Manchester City this evening, which we will be previewing in due course. Rebecca Cray is here as well, but we will begin our football conversation now on match action. Reflecting on Liverpool's 2-0 defeat in the Merseyside derby, let's hear from Liverpool boss Jurgen Klopp, who was speaking to BeIN Sport post-match after that Everton loss.
Our counter-press was horrible, and I know I mentioned that a lot, but it's just because why when we lose a ball, we are in attacking situations, we create and we lose a ball, and the next ball ends up in a challenge with Calvert-Lewin and Ibu Konate. He wants to deflect the ball, or he goes down. No, that's a free kick, that's what they want. And that's really tricky for us, and I have to sort. But as well, obviously possible to do better there, but that became better after 1-0. Then we had them really in their own air in the final third. Created massive chances, big chances. So I don't use them, that means Everton minute by minute build momentum. We minute by minute never had the momentum of it, but didn't get it back. So 2-0, the Everton routine, and still works. Horrendous, difficult to accept, but I have to do it anyway. Yeah, we were not good enough tonight, that's why we lost.
It's still very raw, and the knee-jerk reaction is probably to say title race over, but how do you now convince your players that you are still in this race?
I don't think, if that needs convincing, then what can I do? That's now not clear.
But do you still believe you are?
I don't care in the moment. It's not about that. We have first to win football games, and we should play better. I don't think that a champion should play like us today, to be honest. So that's my honest opinion. Maybe that there were times in the past where you didn't need 90 odd points, and you could play like that and win the next home game, and you are still on the top of the table. That's with the teams we have in the Premier League not possible nowadays. And that's why. So very short turnaround. 12:30 Saturday
again.
And then we will see.
So he doesn't care if they're still in the title race. That's not what it is about at the moment. David Connolly, in your opinion, are Liverpool still in the title race, or is it over now?
Geez, look, I can't see Man City dropping well many or any points. So I think the month of April was always going to be a tough one. You know, four away from home, they had the Atalanta game where, you know, he's tried to manage his squad and he brought players in, and they did not perform. You know, Konate didn't, Elliot Jones, Gomez, none of them performed. Then they had the Fulham game where, you know, you would say second half they were, you know, a lot better, and Gakpo and Jota were instrumental. And then, you know, sort of Jota's out. Gakpo's his wife's having a baby, so he makes himself unavailable. I mean, goodness me, I was quite surprised at that, you know, to be honest. Like I'm a father of four kids, and, you know, if I had the chance to go and play in the Merseyside derby or maybe be at the birth of one of my kids, I think that'd be a tough call. You know, I really do. I think if I had the chance to play with Liverpool, goodness me. I mean, I nearly missed one of my kids' births. I was there for about an hour, and then Roy Keane brought me back to the hotel. And, you know, like, I don't know. That I found, you know, maybe Liverpool fans might be thinking that as well. You know, geez, they really need you. So, I mean, it just seems like whatever they were doing, changing the team, players not available, injuries, whatever, it's just all gone wrong for Jurgen Klopp. And no, I think they're out of it now, which is a real shame. I mean, a boyhood Liverpool fan, I was hoping they'd go right to the end, but I think they're out of it now.
On a broader spectrum of, like you mentioned, kind of the players and individuals with the birth of their child, but mentally, do you think that Liverpool just haven't been at the races, particularly in the past couple of weeks?
Well, I mean, look, he has changed it around an awful lot, which I think is because of the volume of games. But the squad depth has been shown to probably be lacking. And also, lads have gone off the boil. I mean, Mo Salah, his finishing is probably letting down. They've had an awful lot of chances. And you know, he has as well. And his sharp shooting has just not been there. So, you know, Darwin Núñez as well. You know, his finishing has been really wayward. So, I mean... whether it's tiredness, whether it's travel, whatever it may be, I mean, ultimately, like, they just haven't had the same quality that Arsenal and Man City have had in these big games. And you can't get away from that. They just haven't shown the same quality. I mean, look, everyone knows Everton. They're probably not going to hurt you from open play, but set pieces, they're a real threat. The marking for Calvert-Lewin's goal was... I'm sure Jurgen Klopp has ripped a shred off them in the dressing room. I mean, Trent Alexander didn't even jump with him. So, big problems. And... yeah, I mean, whether they should have man-marked Calvert-Lewin, you know, rather than just marking zonally. I'm sure he'll look at that, Jurgen Klopp, but, I mean, you're picking holes in stuff, and in every game they've kind of, you know, probably been off it in the last few, barring the second half at Fulham.
Liverpool don't deserve to win the league, according to their captain, Virgil van Dijk. Rebecca Cray, would you agree with that?
On recent form, yeah, to be honest with you. As a fellow Liverpool fan, you know, it's a case of... just looking at the team now, they just don't look like they have that desire to go and win games. You know, their heads are completely gone. And I think since that game against United in the FA Cup on Paddy's Day, I just have just seen a complete demise in the way we've played, all bar, you know, one or two games throughout the last two or three weeks. But, you know, looking at Trent Alexander for that second goal that Everton got, he completely stepped out of the way, you know, didn't jump once. It was just mind-blowing to watch, you know, give Everton that first win since 2010 as well. It was just heartbreaking. But yeah, look, I don't think it's a case that we're still in it. And I can't see anyone but City going and winning it now.
That's what I don't get,
and
David. Sorry, go on.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, the one thing that's really struck me that stood out, I mean, Rebecca's a Liverpool fan as well. To me, I look at, say, your Man City's and your Arsenal, right? Say those two teams. And I look at the base of their midfield and I just see two terrific players. Yeah, whether it's Rodri or whether it's Declan Rice. And that is the level that you're reaching. Now, Endo... you know, I worked on the game against Crystal Palace. Endo was so low in confidence, the crowd running, they had to take him off. You know, he had to take him off. And he hasn't been able to play him since, really. So he come on the other night and he was poor. And without critiquing fellow pros or whatever, you know, but they brought Endo in, I think, as a replacement for Jordan Henderson. But if you compare the sort of holding midfield players that... you know, and it means because he hasn't fulfilled and had that same quality, Endo, who barely passes forward, and when they're down, they need someone to break lines. He can't do it. And when they kind of don't have that, they put Alexis McAllister there deep, but he wants to be as a number 8 or a number 10, not as a holding midfield player. And some of the signings, I think, of and some of the players have maybe just really shown the difference in quality compared to the absolute top level that costs 100 plus million that, you know, Man City and Arsenal have spent and got, and Liverpool haven't. And I think when it comes right down to the, you know, when it comes to the really important stuff, crucial points of the season against the top teams, winning titles and winning Champions Leagues and winning trophies, that does tell. And I think it's told. And Endo's one example, for example.
Text in from Barry. Dominic Calvert-Lewin was unplayable. We do have to give Everton some credit as well for their performance last night, David.
Yeah, I mean, look, when Calvert-Lewin is fit, I was told a couple of seasons ago, Man United were going to sign him because, you know, he was the finisher in the box that they needed. Now, if he stays fit, he is unplayable because he's 6 foot plus, he's brilliant in the air, he's a fantastic finisher, but he's had a lot of injuries. So, you know, that's his big thing. If he stays fit, I think the world is his oyster. But they knew what they were facing anyway. You know, they knew that you got to get off the floor early. If you don't think you can win the first one, you got to back off and make sure you pick up the second balls. And, you know, someone's got to block him on corners. You can't just let him come in against a zonal system and have no one blocking him and putting him off. I mean, he just sauntered in unmarked to head that goal. So a lot of stuff you could do, but, you know, nothing was done against him.
Final one on Liverpool, Rebecca. Does this feel like yesterday we were chatting about possibly Arne Slot joining Liverpool, and Shane Pinnington interviewed Sander Vesterveld about how much that might be a right fit. And listen, we don't know if that will or won't happen, but does it feel like a bit of an end of an era for Liverpool Football Club?
Yeah, to me, you know, I'm looking at it now and it looks like, I know the announcement was made by Klopp mid-season, which is questionable in itself, albeit, you know, might have been something that was coming out in the media anyway. So it was, maybe it was forced, but for me, it just looks like, you know, we're kind of on that downward slope now. You know, even Klopp, he's on the fourth official probably nearly the whole game, watching him on the screen, you know, and that to me just shows that it's desperation at this stage. You know, there was times in that game I was like, throw the kids on even, why aren't the kids involved? The likes of Bobby Clark showed so much grit and determination when they're involved. You know, obviously Bradley, I think, is injured still. They look like they want to play for Liverpool, and the majority of those players that were out there last night, you know, the likes of Robertson obviously does try his hardest, he just wasn't on it. You know, and obviously the likes of Trent has come back in, walked straight back into the team. They just, you know, it looks like they're just expecting just to get into to teams and squads now with this obviously set up. So yeah, look, to me, it is very much a case that, you know, it could be all but done now.
As I mentioned, David, you're on your way to Brighton against Manchester City this evening. You said it's hard to envisage Manchester City dropping points. Will Brighton prove a test for them, or will it be straightforward enough?
Well, look, I think these are two coaches that have a huge amount of respect for one another. So I imagine this will be a very cagey affair. It's just whether... And have they got enough to stop Man City? I'm not sure they do. You know, saying that, they've got some real talent up top. They play fantastic football. But I'd be amazed if anyone can stop Man City. And I just can't see Brighton being able to do it tonight. As great as they play, I'm a big fan of it, I can't see it.
Mm. Brighton, Forest, Wolves, Fulham, Spurs, West Ham, the running for Manchester City. So I'm right in saying you're backing them for the league.
Well, look, I tipped Liverpool at the start of the season, and you know, you can't switch now. But the only thing is, obviously, the games have been played now, and you know, I believe a few games ago the stats were telling you that Liverpool had the easier running. Well, I mean, that's been proven that no game is sort of won on paper. So, I think now I think it's in City's hands, and I just can't see them blowing it now. I think it's theirs to lose, to be honest now.
Would you share those sentiments, Rebecca Crane?
Sadly, yeah, I would. You know, looking at their fixtures there, you know, Brighton maybe, you know, they only beat them 2-1 the last game. Brighton got a late consolation. Spurs maybe will challenge them in that game. But yeah, look, on paper, I think they're going to see it out. But yeah, it seems to be their stars.
David, you're going to talk about fixture congestion. Final question for you. And obviously he's mentioned that quite a bit. And yes, Arsenal are top of the league at the moment. If Manchester City win their game in hand, they will go on top, and that's a big if. Like, Manchester City, games are coming thick and fast. Might the build up cause any issues for them?
Well, the build up in terms of what, the volume of games?
I mean,
look, that's why they have such a big squad. I mean, you can look at you know, say, I don't know, Arsenal, Emile Smith Rowe. I mean, he's a well-able deputy for Martin Odegaard. But if you take Martin Odegaard out of the team, you know, then are they going to win as many games? No. But if you change it around to accommodate the fixture pile-up, that's what you have the squad for. So to me, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of games, but you're having a lot of players. The consequence of having a lot of players and changing the team is you might lose some games. But so be it. I mean, you know, the League Cup says one thing about, you know, the kind of type of team you can put out. I know there's been murmurings before about the FA Cup and even Man United missing the FA Cup and, you know, stopping replays. I'm really against, because you can, you know, you can't just play for the top one or two or three who play Champions Leagues, you know, because those players are few and far between. The other pros, you know, you ask anyone from the, you know, seventh place down, eighth place down, you know, they play one game a week. You know, one or two games a week for the season. So that's why you have the squad. And for me, you got to use the squad. And if it means you lose some games, you lose some games. But otherwise, what's the point in having a squad? I mean, you know, they're well looked after. They travel the world. It's a lot of games, don't get me wrong. And it's done for TV and this, that and the other. But by the same token, they'll probably be pre-season in China or at the end of the season in Australia or wherever it may be. But that's why they have the squad. You use the squad, you know, that's what it's for.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, David Connolly, thanks for joining us. Enjoy Brighton Manchester City this evening. Becca, you're staying with us because League of Ireland Women's Premier Division returns after a break for the Avenir Sports All-Ireland Cup. Bowes Treaty, Pease Galway, Wexford Shells, Sligo, Cork, Athlone, D'Alore, Shamrock Rovers are idle. Fair to say, Pymount United versus league leaders Galway is probably the pick of the bunch of this weekend's fixtures.
Has to be, yeah. Yeah, looking at the obviously the league table, Pease are on 6 points with Galway running away at the top with 12. You know, I know it is still very early, but...
the run has to stop at some stage.
Has to.
Will it this weekend?
To hope, but yeah, look, they've been trailblazing this season. You know, they've been fantastic in every game they've played, you know. Clinical in front of goal. They're two top goals or two goal scorers in Jenna Slattery and Julianne Russell across the four games are the two top scorers at 1 and 2 in the charts. You know, so look, it's definitely going to be the pick of the bunch. Pymount probably have a bit of a point to prove to show that look, you know, we're still there, thereabouts. They did obviously win their last game against Lisburn 6-0, pretty clinical. Galway also won 4-0 though. So look, it's definitely going to be one to watch on Saturday.
How will Pease approach this? Will they, like, they're important not to give them too much respect in terms of, okay, their league leaders are on a smashing run of form as well, but Pease have experience, the likes of Karen Duggan, they have young players as well that they will want to, James O'Callaghan, knowing James O'Callaghan, he'll want to have a go.
Oh, most definitely. Look, they're set up as they always do, you know, and they might, you know, look to match Galway in terms of their, you know, bit grit and determination, because that's always been a mainstay for Galway. Any Galway team I've ever come up against, you know, they've been very tough, and you've always kind of dreaded playing those games because they could always take points. You know, now they're getting points and they're coming through in games, and, you know, obviously gave Pymount a bad affair of it in 2021 on the last day of the season. Obviously giving Shells the title on the last day as well. So look, James is he's gonna set up in terms of, you know, Karen Duggan will hold that midfield. He'd be relying on the likes of Aaron McLaughlin, you know, coming in there and hopefully creating something higher up the park. I'm not too sure if Sive Doyle is back in there. You know, and Galway then again will be very much business as usual, as they have been.
Should be a cracker, 5 PM in PRL Park. Wexford Shells, like, it's hard to believe, and I only kind of noticed it today in the league table, Wexford 11th, no wins, one draw, two defeats in the first three games, which is a terrible start for Wexford. And they're a better team than that. They have the players there.
They are. Like, I'm looking at that. I know it's only, you know, three games have been played, but, like, the Wexford that I've always known have always been up and around maybe 6th, 5th, you know, at this point of the season. It's you know, it's worrying for them. You know,
but they have a point to prove now.
Most definitely. Yeah. Look, and I think they always do, and that's the way they've always played. Even if they are on top of the table, they always have that point to prove. You know, they're very, very tough. You know, I think Kylie Murphy is still out for this game. You know, but they still have the likes of Nikki Sinha holding it at the back there. You know, Ella Malloy in there, who's their main threat for me. You know, fantastic player. She's come back from injury flying. It's just sad that it's a case that the maybe the few around her haven't risen with her. But yeah, look, it'll still be a very much a great game. They always seem to step it up when they play Shells, though. So yeah, another great game to watch.
For Shells, positively, you could view it as unbeaten start of the season. Negatively, you could view it as only one win and 4-3 draws. A frustrating start to the season?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think on paper you're looking at Shell's squad going, well, you know, that's probably the team to beat this year, but look, that doesn't always play out that way. You know, the final third I think has been the place that has let Shell's down, just being clinical in front of goal, and they've done everything, you know, but score, albeit the 3-0 win against Cork. You know, Gemma Quinn got a hat-trick there, delighted for her, really clinical on the day. But it's just building on that now, you know, and obviously they are creating those chances. It's just about finishing them. So yeah, it'll be one to watch again.
Will Athlone continue their good start to the season? Second in the table, they host D'Alore Waves.
I think so, yeah. Look, you know, Athlone are still up there, obviously second now at the minute. You know, D'Alore still very young. Laura Heffernan at the helm there, you know, they're very, very young squad, but I think Athlone at the minute they're on a good run. You know, obviously beat Sligo in the Avenir All-Ireland Cup there 2-1, but they seem to have strength throughout the park, you know, and I think they'll come out on top in that game.
D'Alore perhaps going through transitional period at the time.
Definitely, yeah. Look, I think it's been a case for them. They've had a lot of bodies out over the course of the last 2 years. It's a bit of a building phase now, it seems to be. You know, Laura's obviously come from the 19s there. She knows that there's obviously a lot of good players that have come through. You know, building with them this season and obviously hopefully improve then going on further this season, obviously next season as well.
7:30, that one in Lizzie Wullen for Athlone D'Alore, and incidentally 6 p.m. in Ferry Carrig for Wexford Utes and Shelburne. Elsewhere, 7 p.m. at the Showground, Sligo Rovers versus Cork City. Sligo losing to Athlone 2-1 as you mentioned, and Cork losing 3-0 to Shells last weekend. So two teams that looking for a bit of a response from the weekend's results.
Definitely, look, I think they'd be probably the two more evenly matched teams at the minute. You know, Cork, I think, are probably happier with their position at this point of the season. I know they would have been last season at this point. Yeah, look, I know that the last game they played didn't go too well, but they'd be looking to you know, come through now against Sligo, who again, haven't been the worst. You know, they put up to Shells at the start of the season as well. But a pretty evenly matched team, or sorry, game in them too.
Sligo looking for their first win of the season as well. Two draws and one defeat in their first three matches. And the first fixture on Saturday, 3 p.m. at Dalymount, Bowes versus Treaty United. How do you see this one playing out, Rebecca?
Yeah, I've been really impressed with Treaty over the course of the first few games. You know, they've shown up. They've got some goal scorers there. Aaron Van Dolder, I should say, has been clinical for them. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they travel now coming up against Bowes, who'll be obviously looking to come back after their 2-1 defeat to Linfield. But yeah, look, definitely a good game. Obviously Ken Kiernan will have the Bowes team set up really well, but Treaty again, another country team coming up to the big smoke, hopefully to prove a point.
Well, Dominic Foley has done well for Treaty at the moment. Great crowds down at Treaty, fifth in the table at the moment. Should be a super Saturday of Women's League Ireland Premier Division action. I want to finish the conversation with Rebecca. Noel King, new Dundalk manager, it caught everyone by surprise. I was only on Game On, I think, a couple of weeks ago, and I think it was Alan Colley was here, and he's like, there's no old school managers, you know, your safe pair of hands, your Liam Buckley's, your P-Mans, they're not knocking around the league anymore. And then all of a sudden, I was made eat my words. Out of nowhere, Noel King is appointed Dundalk manager. Of course, you worked closely with him at your time, at his time at Shell's women's team. I'm sure you were surprised to see him become Dundalk manager. Will it be a success?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think Noel was very much surprised as well, as were we all. You know, it's definitely coming from left field. You know, the case that, you know, he said he only got the phone call on the Friday, he was in on the Saturday. And yeah, will it be a success? I really don't know. You know, it's definitely, obviously Noel has carried his name now for the last 3 decades maybe in Irish football. You know, very much an old school kind of motivator. You know, obviously I've witnessed that firsthand, and he has obviously got the great chat in the dressing room, but has that experience. I think it'll be more or less who he brings in around him will determine how Dundalk do, to be honest with you. You know, it is very much a huge surprise, but I'm really intrigued to see how he gets on against Bowes now. And obviously Shells then as well, so we'll all be watching quite intently.
You didn't get the call to go up the M1, leave Shells and join Noel King's backroom team, no?
I didn't. No. I wouldn't be going anyway. That M1, those tolls,
no.
couldn't be affording that.
Rebecca Cray, thank you very much. We'll end our football chat on a bit of news, actually. On a day when FIFA has announced a partnership with Saudi Arabia's state-owned oil company, Aramco, there is good news for football traditionalists. There will be no VAR in Sweden. After members of most clubs in Sweden adopted motions opposing VAR, Swedish football will no longer pursue its introduction. A big win for membership democracy in Swedish football, and shows the influence supporters have. It means Sweden is now the only league in the top 30 European leagues to say no to the introduction of VAR. Stay with us here in Game On. We turn our attention to rugby next in the company of former Ireland international Sharon Lynch.
Game On.
Rugby.
Now, co-captain Sam Monaghan returns to the Ireland team for Saturday's final Women's Six Nations meeting with Scotland, among three changes to Scott Beaman's side. The second row missed out in last week's defeat to England at Twickenham, but is reinstated to the second row, co-captaining the side alongside flanker Adele McMahon. The remaining changes come in the back line as Enya Breen comes into the centre, where she replaces Aoife Dalton, while Maeve Dealey earns her first start of the championship at full back. Leinster's Katie Heffernan is also in line for a debut off the bench, with the Ireland Sevens international named in the 23 shirt after impressing for the Wolfhounds during the Celtic Challenge. Before we chat to former Ireland international Sharon Lynch, let us hear from John McKee, Ireland assistant coach, who was speaking at the team announcement earlier today.
Oh, Sam, a very important player for us. You know, we saw her perform earlier in the competition, and we're looking for her skill as a player, but also her leadership within the group. Well, the focus for us this week is the performance we bring against Scotland at Kingspan. That's all we're focused in on. And what is in our control is how we approach that game and how we actually play in the game, what the level of performance we bring. That's what's in our control. And then other things of how we finish in the competition depends on other things, maybe on other results. Yeah, obviously that other game is earlier than ours, so the result will be known, and yeah, people will know maybe what's required going into the game, but that wouldn't be our primary focus as our motivator or our psychology going into a game. Probably first and foremost, we're starting to develop some more depth around our squad. You can see that from the selections that you know, the different players have come in and be able to perform at that level, so that's very important for us going forward. Our conditioning and our general resilience to be able to play at the level of intensity of international rugby has really improved, you know, compared to this time 12 months ago. And I think that, you know, it's reflected on the fact that we go into the last week of the campaign and pretty well all our players are available for selection.
So, Sharon Lynch, before we react to the comments from John McKee there, what is your initial reaction to the team that was named with the three changes?
Yeah, I'm pleasantly surprised that he kept consistency in his team again this week. Look, I think that's very important for a squad, that they're not rotating players just for the sake of it. I think the team that he has picked has proven themselves over the last two games. I know there was a few changes in the first game, but since then he's pretty much kept that consistency. So I'm glad to see that he's kept about Sam Monaghan back in again, which is obviously everyone's delighted to see. So she'll bring a lot of a little bit more experience, and obviously that pack, I'm delighted to see her coming through. So I'm pleasantly surprised that there hasn't been many changes, only out of necessity more than anything else.
Have we discovered squad depth, and have we learned to compete at international level?
Oh, look, I think this year was always going to be trial and error, and try and build confidence, and, you know, trying different people in different positions, but try and galvanise the squad in terms of wins, performances, get tries under their belt. You know, last year was such a turbulent year for them, and confidence would have been low. They would have this year focused on building the resources in the team and the backroom squad and the resources there. So I think they have achieved that. But look, there's always room for more competition within a squad. So look, it's hard to know until you kind of look back on the entire series, see how performances were, and not just stop there. It's not just about Six Nations. It's about developing the squad for the next challenge and next year's Six Nations and potentially a World Cup. So you can't really say that it's just a 23 or a squad of 30 or whatever it is. It's always building. And I understand that the backroom team are going around to the AIL games and further afield to discover new talent. So there's always room for improvement, I think.
Speaking of that World Cup, permutations for Saturday. Unless Italy win big in the first of the day's triple header in Cardiff, the Ireland-Scotland game could effectively become a World Cup qualifier. A significant victory by Italy in Cardiff beforehand could leave Ireland needing a win by a specific margin to gain that coveted third place. Will that be an extra incentive, or might it negatively be viewed as a bit of a distraction and an extra bit of pressure on the players?
I hope this week they focused on telling the girls that they can't control anything beyond their own game, their own 80 minutes. So look, the old cliche always stands, and I'd always stand by it myself, like, control the controllables. You can't, they'll know what to do before they go into this game. That will be nice to have that bit of power and that bit of knowledge to know what they have to do. And if the game is super, like, it becomes as important as we hope it should be, then I don't think they're going to perform any differently. I think they're going to go out in this game to have a team performance, have an individual performance. It's the last game in a championship. This has been a roller coaster of the Six Nations for the team. So they're going to want to end it on a high for themselves and for the efforts it's put in by everybody. So look, of course, it's going to become an important fixture, but I think it was always going to be, even if they're not competing for a third place finish, they're going to want to do it for themselves and the team.
what do we have to do to get over the line? What will be key to getting over the line against Scotland?
For me, it's get that defensive line and that structure back in place. I mean, they had developed that through the first three games. Unfortunately, England, that kind of fell away a bit, like be it themselves, be it the actual structure, or be it how good England were, who knows. But look, at the end of the day, the defence just wasn't up to scratch. So they really need to bring that back and have that in their armoury as their biggest tool, because if they can stop Scotland scoring, they will. I believe they will score tries. So I think for me, they need to stop Scotland scoring. And obviously their set pieces, I think their scrum is very, very strong, and we've seen that in the past few games, but their line-out for me needs to be a bit better. They need to be giving their attacking line a good platform to come off. So for me, both those defence and set pieces need to be a lot better. And again, individual performances. I think that 9-10 channel is very important. I think the two girls have worked really, very well together in the last few games. So I think I'd like to see that developed a bit more. And obviously kicking has been a great tool for the team, but it shouldn't be their only tool. I think it's great to get us out of trouble and for territory, but it shouldn't be their only option. I think we can have a bit more attacking options down in the back line. Like, we've brilliant. I think personally, we've one of the better wingers in the competition. So we need to utilise her, give her the space, try and use that attacking platform to give her a bit more space, because she can be extremely dangerous.
You mentioned defence. I think even the most optimistic rugby fan probably expected a defeat against England. Perhaps not as big a defeat as it was. Will that be difficult, considering how easily England opened up Ireland, to regroup defensively? Listen, I'm aware it's a completely different challenge against Scotland compared to England, but just to kind of regroup defensively when you shipped 88 points.
Yeah, look, it won't be easy. I mean, that will hurt them. There's no doubt. Like you said, I don't think anybody expected them to win, but the defeat was pretty ugly, to say the least. But look, they would have dealt with that on Monday in their post-game analysis, and I'd imagine they would have had a lot of home truth and then gone, right, let's park it and let's focus on the game this weekend. And then the rest of the week would have been on positives and what they can control. So, yeah, look, it's not easy, and they would have been bruised. But I think the occasion this Saturday will be big enough to make them forget about that game and focus on what they have to do this Saturday. I mean, nearly 7,000 people in Kingspan cheering them on will have to help with that. So, look, yeah, I think they will be drilled into them to just forget about it and move on.
Given it's already been a better campaign than last year, can we say this is already a successful Six Nations campaign, or do we need to beat Scotland to say this has been a successful Six Nations campaign?
Yeah, I think they need the win. Yeah, to see that as a successful campaign. I think there's no doubt. I think they will have disappointments in every game. Even the Wales game, even the win, they will have seen that they didn't put in that consistent performance in the second half that they had in the first. So look, they will look at every game and see that they could have done more, and especially that Italy game will hurt them. So to get a win will definitely ease the last few weeks. But I think, yeah, it'll have to have a win to say that it was successful, but they will look at the whole Six Nations as a whole and say that, look, they could have done better and they left a lot behind them.
So when it's all said and done, come Saturday afternoon in Belfast, will Ireland overcome Scotland, Sharon?
I really want to say yes. It's going to be very, very difficult on the day, and I just hope that people get behind the team and they just have a bit of luck on the day, because they need every bit of it. Scotland are going to be here to prove a point as well. There's no reason why they can't beat us. I want to say a very, very tight win by Ireland.
Okay, here's hoping. Just briefly, in the other matches, obviously Wales-Italy at 12:15, but France-England, 4:45 in France, will decide the Six Nations. Who is going to win this year's Six Nations?
That is going to be a cracker. England, for me, on paper and just from past performances, they are the out-and-out obvious winners there. But it's in France, and going to France with a French crowd, the French are not going to make it easy for them. It is going to be a very tense occasion for them. So, yeah, they'll have to pull out every performance. Everyone's going to have to be firing at all cylinders to win. I think France are definitely going to put it up to them. So, I don't think they're going to walk it. I hope it's a great game because I think the Six Nations need it, a tight game, because England and the All England also need a tight game. They need a bit of competition themselves. So yeah, for me it's England, but I'm hoping France will upset.
Well, here's hoping for three classic matches. Sharon Lynch for now, thank you so much for taking the call. Don't forget, you can listen to live commentary of Ireland versus Scotland at 2:30 on Saturday Sport on RT Radio 1. Watch live coverage on RT 2 and the RT Player, or follow a live blog on the RT Sport website. Now, don't go anywhere, because Conor Brophy, the Irish NFL show, is up next to chat American football, because tonight is the NFL Draft. Stick with us here on Game On.
Game On.
Eye on America.
The NFL Draft. You've been working your entire life for this moment.
Marvin Harrison Jr. is magical.
Forget all the noise. Your game speaks for itself.
Caleb Wilson is ludicrous.
No matter where you're headed, the journey to greatness.
Tom McCarthy, the milestone victory.
Shady Daniel Dallas Turner.
Gonna take a shot. First touchdown.
Starts here.
Time to get this show started, Detroit.
Now, the NFL Draft is on tonight. Conor Brophy of the Irish NFL show joins me on the line. Conor, you guys are having the cracking cork, a live draft show on the cards this evening.
Or I will be shortly anyway, Shane. I'm about to head down there, so I'm still Dublin based for the moment, doing my last bit of cramming before I head down to meet the rest of the lads down there. But as you say, we're broadcasting live on the Irish NFL show from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. this morning. So the first 32 picks of the first round of the draft, we're going 1 to 32 or until the coffee runs out, whichever comes first.
Listen, this is one of the biggest nights for American football fans. Like, you have the Super Bowl, but then you have the NFL draft. So give me three things to be really keeping an eye out for. Why is this so big?
Well, firstly, the NFL has this absolute genius for making an event out of just about anything. So, you know, they have the schedule launch, which comes up in May, and there'll be a whole bunch of razzmatazz around that. There's the Super Bowl, obviously. There's the opening day of the season. There's the international games, which a lot of fans here will probably be really interested in. 8 of them this year, 3 of them in London, which is really exciting. And that's kind of, I suppose, the closest that a lot of us get to touch and feel until the NFL touches down in Dublin, which we hope will happen in the very near future, given the interest of the Steelers, the Jaguars and the Jets in this market. So fingers crossed on that one. But the draft itself is the fixture of the off-season, because it's the chance where all the teams have to really transform their prospects. And it's hard to get this across to people who aren't interested in the sport, but it's kind of unusual that this model that the NFL has, which is almost this kind of socialist model where they give a leg up to the teams that do the worst each season. So you get basically the worst you do, the better the choice you get of the young upcoming talent that's arriving into the league, having just finished playing college football. So the worst team gets the top pick right the way down to the 32nd pick in this round, and there'll be 7 rounds in total. So the Kansas City Chiefs, who won the Super Bowl, end up with the last overall pick. So they only get to pick after everybody else is chosen. And unique then, really, among sports that we would follow, I guess, you get the opportunity to get your David Clifford, to get your Lionel Messi, to get your transformational player, your Katie McCabe, who's going to take your team in a completely different direction, you hope, to the one that they were in last season.
Okay. This is pretty much make or break for certain franchises, or it could be. Like, listen, there's no guarantee that these college players are going to be stars in the NFL. They could end up being accountants in a couple of years' time. So you are taking a bit of a punt, but this is extremely important for certain franchises.
It is, and you're absolutely right. It can literally make or break the team or the franchise in the medium term. Like, last year was probably a perfect example. The Houston Texans, widely derided over the past couple of years, the general manager there and the ownership under huge pressure, being accused of being incompetent. You have a new coach comes in, and they had the number two overall pick, I should say, last year. And they selected a guy called CJ Stroud, the quarterback from Ohio State, who just lit up the NFL last season. They literally went from zero to hero in one season, from the second worst record in the league. They go to the playoffs, they win a playoff game. Now they're seen as contenders in the space of just one season and two crucial picks. They picked CJ Stroud, and then they got a key defensive player called Will Anderson Jr. in the fourth pick in the draft, because they traded around, which is something maybe that we'll come to. But you can really literally transform the fortunes of your franchise that quickly. And that's what a lot of teams will be hoping for in this draft. Not least, full disclosure, the team that I support, the Chicago Bears, who are lucky enough to have the number one overall pick.
Okay. I believe they know who they want to pick, but they aren't sharing the news just yet.
Yeah. I mean, there's little drama around that one. So they're 99.999 whatever percent sure to take Caleb Williams, the USC quarterback, the number one overall mooted number one overall pick. It would be a massive shocker if they didn't. They've kind of, you know, their general manager, Ryan Poles, has been asked about it ceaselessly, and he's kind of smiling sphinx-like and not giving anything away. But everybody pretty much knows that it's going to be Caleb Williams. It's actually after that that it gets really interesting, because there's a bun fight over a crop of quarterbacks that are seen as potentially transformational talents, but there's not that many of them to go around, and there's a lot of teams that need a quarterback.
Okay, who are they then? If you're looking into to Connor Brophy's crystal ball about who's going to be drafting who.
So the ones that you'll hear and the ones to watch out for, and there's an interesting wrinkle here, because 13 players are actually in the room in Detroit where the draft is taking place. The rest of them will be at home, and they'll have their setup with their family and friends and their agents all around them, and you'll see them pop up on the screen if you're watching the draft live, and there'll be much excitement when their names are called out, and you'll see the celebration in the background. In the room in Detroit, you've only got 13 players. So the NFL has invited players who are most likely to get selected in the first round, and they would include Drake May, a North Carolina quarterback who a lot of people are really excited about, Jaden Daniels, a quarterback from LSU who was the reigning Heisman Trophy winner, so he's voted the best player in college football last year, potentially a transformational talent. Now, what happens at the second pick will be critical here in terms of the excitement level around the draft and what happens, because the Washington Commanders, who have the number two pick, are expected probably to take Jaden Daniels, but they may not. They may go for Drake May. The Patriots pick at number three, and they may go for one or other of those. However, what might happen is if the Commanders take Drake May at two, Drake May is the guy that the Patriots seem to want, so they may then trade out of the number three overall pick, and then it's all thrown up in the air, and we could see some real excitement from there, and people will start going bananas in the room as that happens. One other thing to watch, though, is the faces of the players in the room as the picks tick by, and as you get closer to the end of the round, the guys who haven't been picked yet will be getting more and more nervous, which is it's its own form of grisly theatre. Obviously, it's very exciting for us as fans. It must be terrible for the guys in the room as the tension mounts, but that's a nice little sideshow to keep an eye on.
Oh, I can imagine. Lots to look forward to. Conor Brophy of the Irish NFL Show, thank you so much for joining us. Conor and the lads will be broadcasting live from the Clayton Hotel in Cork City. Coverage starts from 1 a.m. So catch the lads and the Irish NFL Show on social media. That's all we have time for. Beto da Silva is up next, so do stay tuned to 2FM. Big thanks to Ronan Lawler and Laurie Davis for working on this evening's show. Marie Crowe is back with you tomorrow from 6. Have a great weekend for myself. And from all of the Game On team, it is bye for now.